Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is coming home. And my very special guests for this conversation are Dr. Dickon Bettinger and Natasha Sverdlov. Now, I first met Dickon. I second met Dickon, but the time I remember meeting Dickon was the year of the New England Patriots, New York Giants tragedy. It was early 2008. It was a sad time for all of us. Well, me. And I remember just thinking, you know, really nice guy. And then gradually learning more and more about the work that he did with individuals, the work that he did with companies, and realizing that I was inadvertently watching the team of my childhood crash my dreams onto the rocks of destiny next to one of the great psychological spiritual teachers of our time. So that was kind of fun to find out. Just made it all the more embarrassing, the reaction I had. And Natasha, I'm remembering now, tell me if this was the first time we met, but I remember the first time I met you, you were in the front row of Coaching from the Inside Out in Hyde Park in London.
That's right. Yeah. And we were four years ago.
Yeah. And we were discussing the book, The User Illusion.
Yeah, or No Boundary, I think.
By Ken Wilber. Yeah. There you go. Well, so here's why I wanted to have Dickon and Natasha on. They have written a wonderful new book called Coming Home, Uncovering the Foundations of Psychological Well-Being. And when they sent me the manuscript to review, you know, for a possible quote, I enjoyed it tremendously. And then the more I read, I started to become a little bit horrified because I had just written but not yet published The Space Within, Finding Your Way Back Home. And it was like the same book written from a different perspective. And it was so close that at one point I kind of freaked out and thought, oh my God, they're going to think I just copied their book. Because there was a quote, and this was the bit that really did it for me. There's part eight of the book is called Coming Home. And there's a quote they have in it, which is the same quote that I use at the beginning of The Space Within that I had never seen in writing anywhere in the world until I put it in my book and they put it in theirs. And it makes a good jumping off point for our conversation. And it's this, it's from Sidney Banks, who was the theosopher and the philosopher. And I'm sure they'll both talk about Sid throughout our time together. But he said, we are all searching for our home grounds. We're searching to find the way home. And to find the way home, what we have to do is look at everything in reverse, because naturally, if you're away from home, if you keep walking your walk further away, to find home, you've got to turn around. You have to go the opposite direction, and instead of searching outside for the answer you seek, all you do is turn around and look inside, and there lie the secrets that you want. So guys, I'd love to just know why coming home was the metaphor you used to build your book around, and what that means to you.
I have a very strange voice today, so I just want to... I was joking with Michael before the show, saying I've got my radio voice ready. I have a little laryngitis, so coming home... That was ironic, wasn't it, Michael? Is that it was like you and I and Natasha were just on the same wavelength. And in the teachings that we've been exposed to, there's a number of different ways into this understanding, and we really were both looking in the same direction on that one. I thought it was fascinating. This whole notion that inside of us, inside of everybody, there is a space of absolute psychological purity and freedom. And when people touch that space, they experience ease and peace of mind and well-being, and it's right there under our noses. And as the quote from Sid Banks so beautifully points out, when people are looking for well-being, whether it's psychological or spiritual well-being, they tend to look to the outside for answers. In other words, they look to find a particular teacher, or they read lots of books, or they'll do what I did for many years. I was meditating 4 hours a day, and I was writing down dreams every night and working on them, and using all different kinds of workbooks to try and gain psychological freedom, well-being, or spiritual understanding. And Sid Banks was such an interesting teacher. Here's this guy from Scotland with a ninth grade education. He was so poor he had to leave school at the end of ninth grade to help raise money for his family, who had this enlightenment experience. And the main thrust of his teaching was what you're looking for, you already have. It's not like any of us don't have perfect well-being inside. And that, to me, was a radical message. And that we're connected to the same wisdom and intelligence that governs the whole universe. And we have access to that wisdom. So that when we touch that space we call home, it awakens something deep inside of us that then shows up in our lives as love, understanding, common sense, wisdom, so forth. And the metaphor coming home has been really good, a good one for us too.
So on a very practical level, coming home or being home is also about this space that's always there within that can help us. For instance, if we are caught up in some feeling, it can be, for instance, my mother is suffering some depression right now, and being here in the States, being far away from her, I get these little messages, and I feel myself getting upset about how she's doing. And then at the same time as I'm upset, I can also be aware of in my consciousness this space of home. And as I feel the sadness and I'm aware of the space of home inside of myself, there's some amazing benefits to that, which one of them is that there's no real suffering. There's no psychological suffering in me. There's the awareness that I'm feeling sad for her and that I can be compassionate with her. And at the same time, there's a complete ease inside of myself. Also, I know that it passes. I know that it won't hold on for very long. So my feelings come, my feelings go, my thoughts come and go. And home is the space that's always there. It doesn't go away. And it's completely untouched by anything, no matter how powerful in our life, no matter how much suffering there's been in the experiences we've had. This space is completely untouched. And the last thing is also a benefit when you start familiarizing yourself with this space is that it's always there. It doesn't matter what we're going through, ups and downs, we can always become aware of this space that's inside. So I remember when we started writing this book about 2 years ago that it started as conversations we were having mostly about consciousness. And every time we'd have conversations, I'd write down reflections, I'd send them to Dickin, he'd write his reflections and my reflections. And I remember one day in the middle of doing this that the metaphor coming home, I thought, this is what we're talking about. So I immediately called Dickin. I said, how about the title coming home for a book? And he said, that sounds perfect. So that's how it started.
Yeah. Well, and it is, it's my favorite metaphor as well, in the sense of that feeling of finding that place inside yourself, it always feels familiar.
Yes.
And I remember one client writing and saying, no, it's not home. It's my auntie's house. 'Cause at home I have to do chores, but at my auntie's house, I can just put my feet up. So I wanted to kind of take people through sort of the same process you take them through in talking about this. And you share in the book Sydney Banks, two big insights, his major insights. And the first one that you share is it's all thought. And you have a quote from Sid. My whole world just exploded in front of me. It was so simple that it just broke me through into separate realities. And it was so devastatingly beautiful that all my problems dropped away. They all started flashing past me as just fantasies because I started to realize that insecurity was thought. All of a sudden, to find out that it's all thought, just thought manifesting into a feeling. That realization was so beautiful that I never slept for 3 days and three nights. Now, I'd love it if you could talk a little bit more about just how all-encompassing it's all thought really is.
It covers every single bit of human feeling and experience from the worst agony to the highest ecstasy. It's all created from thought. So Sid, before he had that insight, was very insecure. And he'd get really anxious about things. He'd have panic attacks. He would worry a lot, would get down quite a bit, was very serious. And he said to someone one time, "Oh, I'm so insecure." And the fellow said to him, "Oh, Sid, you're not insecure. You just think you are." And at that moment, he had a really profound insight, if you will, that imagine what it would be like if you truly realized that every bit of your unhappiness is an illusion because it's a temporary thought-created experience. So he said it felt like 40 years of unhappiness just dissolved in the same way when you wake up from a nightmare. As soon as you wake up, it feels like the nightmare begins to just dissolve and it has no ultimate reality. And so he started just sharing with anybody who would listen. You are living in a thought-created experiential world from the moment you're born until you die. And he said, as simple as that is, and as truthful as that is, nobody really knows that. And, you know, when I first started hearing about this, it helped me enormously to see any anxiety or upset or frustration that I was feeling, that it was just a temporary thought creation and it really had nothing to do with the external world or circumstance. And it was like nobody was saying that it's 100%, that there's only one source to human feelings, that other people or circumstance can't cause you stress or make you feel upset or even make you happy. And so I was working as a psychologist. I had been for 10 years, and I started asking all of my clients, what are you feeling right now? And it wouldn't matter if they were feeling really good or feeling horrible. And I say, well, where do you think that feeling is coming from? And they'd say, well, I'm feeling this way because it's my birthday, or I'm feeling this way because the sun is out, or I'm feeling this way because of what somebody, I'm feeling upset because of what somebody said to me yesterday, or I'm stressing out because I have an awful lot going on in my life right now. And I started saying, does anybody know that their feeling is always created from thought, from their own thinking? And I started asking everybody. I was like, I can't believe this. And I couldn't find anybody who, when I'd ask them, where do you think your feeling is coming from? They said, oh, Dickon, that's obvious. It's just being created from what I'm thinking in this moment, period. Full stop. I go, wow. This misunderstanding about where experience coming from is rampant. And as a psychologist, I had been trained that stress is created from stressors. Even though a lot of there were so many exceptions to that. There would be people in stressful situations who wouldn't feel stress. But they still were teaching stress comes from stressors, and situations cause you to be upset, or your past, or your personality, or what your environment, or the way people treat you, or there were all of these different theories, and everybody had a different theory about where feelings came from. And here's Sid Banks' ninth grade education thing. I've had a profound realization that there's only one source to experience. That covers everything.
Now, when we talk about thought, we're not talking about the thinking that each individual have. We're talking about that which create our thinking. So often when I work with people, I hear them saying, well, I'm having this feeling, but I'm not thinking anything right now. But thought is not the, it's the fertile ground from which everything arises. Every single thought that's available to us human beings comes from the power of thought, or the principle of thought, as Sid called it. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking that which creates thought, that's always there, that can create anything. So as Dickens said, from agony to ecstasy, every single emotion that's available to us comes from that spiritual power of thought that lies beyond anything we can ever think. So it's a powerful realization for Sid and for everyone else who start seeing that in their lives. And that's what we're seeing with our clients, and you are too, Michael, of course, all over the world, how powerful it is when people start seeing that.
I remember when I first started reading Sid books, and they're sort of, wisdom fiction, I think, is the category that bookshops would put them in.
Yeah.
And you know, they're written fine. They're not great literature. They're not terrible. They're written fine. And I used to marvel at the fact, because all the books sort of have a structure where there is a character who is sort of a seeker of some description, you know, dealing with some difficult circumstances in their lives, who come across a wiser person. And the wiser person at some point says to them, you know, it's all thought. And the seeker kind of argues with them for a little while. And then at some point in the book, has an epiphany and goes, oh my God, it's all thought. And I remember I'd read these books and I would be like, why are they so excited about this? Because it made sense to me that it was all thought, but I didn't see the profundity of the implications of that until one day. I remember I was in a cab driving through London, and I looked around and I watched this mum with her baby outside of a council house. And I could see she was outside with her baby, but she was in her thoughts. And then I saw somebody else walking their dog, and I could see they were outside walking their dog, but they were in their thoughts. And I just saw everybody in their separate realities. And I did have that experience of being like that character in the Sid Banks novel, going, oh my God,
yeah,
we're all living in a world of thought.
Yeah, that's a profound spiritual teaching too, because most people tend to think we're just living and reacting to the world itself as if it's just a material world. And we don't see that every bit of our experience is being created from this, as Natasha was saying, the power of thought, the formless energy behind life that has the power to create our particular experience. And it's so we're saying all experience is created from that invisible power out into the world. So it's created inside out, as opposed to what's been taught for centuries or believed for centuries or talked about for centuries, is that the outside world creates our inner experience. And so it just flips it completely around. And it's much more accurate, much more scientific, and it can help explain all the apparent exceptions of how bad people can feel. So it becomes immediately practical to anybody who learns this.
Well, I remember when I first got some insight into thought and started working with clients and sharing it, and it was, I always kind of think of Sid like the little kid in the Emperor's New Clothes going, you know, he's naked. You know, you're making this up, and everyone going, what? Oh my God, we are making it up. And I remember at that point, I took on a client who was very interested in what I was sharing about thought, but didn't like the idea of spirit at all. In fact, was said, I will only work with you if you promise not to talk to me about anything that smacks of spirit or God. And at the time I thought, yeah, okay. Cause somebody could get so much from seeing, an insight into the nature of thought. And what actually happened really surprised me, which was, it was a disaster, because she did see that her experience was being created from thought, but she felt like, well, now I'm just stuck forever. If the problem was the world, I kind of feel like I can impact the world, but I don't know how to impact thought. And then in your book, you I love the way you lay it out. You just kind of shared that, well, Sid's second big insight, was it's not just that it's all thought, it's all one. And again, there's just a lovely quote you guys share, but there is a greater secret than my first insight that it's all thought. The greater secret is that you can step beyond the five senses. And when you learn to step beyond the five senses, then you live a happy, contented life. A life full of love, because love is always the answer, no matter what. Love and understanding together create what you would call a beautiful life. And to me, that was what I really saw was the missing piece in both forms of the word peace, was that if all we had was recognizing the illusion, good to know, but you're still kind of floating blind. But there's something about seeing that next piece that actually we're part of a larger whole that really seems to do something for people. So again, I'd love if you guys would just, wax rhapsodic about the nature of things.
Well, this is, I've always been attracted to spiritual teaching and have a long history of studying with spiritual teachers. And this is where it really points toward the unitary nature of the whole universe, is that the mystery and miracle and beauty of life is that out of this vast, formless sea of spiritual energy, everything arises and is created out of that same energy, so that it's all the same energy, whether in form or formless. And to be able to see that we're all connected to the whole of life really brings to life this deeper enlightenment experience that Sid had, that has relevance to every single human being, is that we're not just stuck with our own mentality. We're connected to the intelligence and wisdom behind all of life, so that when we, like you said, Mike, when we wake up out of the illusion of our own thought-created nightmares, or I like to call them daymares, that when we wake up out of the illusion of our daymares, we fall into this space that's free of the contamination of our own thinking. And when we touch that space, this deeper wisdom breaks through into our consciousness with feelings of love and understanding and thinking that's wise, that's helpful, that's of a higher order, that can guide us through any kind of difficulty in life.
Michael, I remember when you and I met those years ago on the first break, we had this conversation about No Boundary. You said it was one of your favorite books. It's one of mine too, which kind of points to this space that has no, there's no inside, there's no outside, it's all one. And what Dickon and I wanted to do quite early in our book was to point towards this space, more than maybe looking at thought, but really pointing toward our true nature, because that's our formless part. That's where we're all one. And the more we connect to this space, the less anxious we feel, the less that there's no separation between me and you. There's no There's no contest. There's no disagreement. When we're all one, what arises from this knowing is the sense that there's love, there's compassion. I want to do good. It arises from within because I see that there's no separation. So that second insight is one of the things that Dickon and I really wanted to try and fold out for people. As you touch this space, thoughts dissolve. So any kind of thinking that you have, when you touch this space, they disappear, and they become in a way meaningless. And then from that space arises this sense of love, of connection, of compassion, that then in a way animates us or moves us into service. We want to do good. We want to be kind to other people. And that's the beauty, and what we've been trying to unfold is this, that it's not, I'm not trying to be of service. I am being of service because it's a movement that happens from inside. So the whole chapter we have about living in harmony with the principles is very much about this movement that takes us from realizing our true nature and then moving us into action in a real practical way in the world of form.
There's another section of the book that I love on you call realizing the deep quiet of your being, and I'm going to read a little bit from the book and then include the Sid Banks quote that Dickon and Natasha include. You're listening to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal. I'm in conversation with Dr. Dickon Bettinger and Natasha Swerdlov. They're the They're the authors of a wonderful book called Coming Home: Uncovering the Foundations of Psychological Well-Being. And in this chapter, you say, as your understanding of the principles deepens, you will begin to realize the deep quiet of your inner being. As you realize that this deep quiet is always within, you will stop using your own efforts to quiet your mind. You will simply become aware of and rest in this eternal quiet. As you become familiar with the depth and beauty of this quiet, you will naturally be drawn within. And as your realization of the nature of your being deepens further, you will stabilize in this natural quiet. It is out of this quiet that our love and wisdom are free to arise. And then there's another quote from Sid. We're searching for a silent mind. It's in the silence of the mind that all the secrets of life are found, where all happiness is found, where the keys are found. And the second you open that door, you find a new level of consciousness. It is a must. Life must become more beautiful. And I just think that speaks to the question that I know my readers inevitably write to me about, I'm sure your readers write to you about, is, well, how do I do it? Right? How do I come home? That sounds good. I'd like that. How do I do that? And I know you address that in different ways through the book, but I'd love, just for the listeners, if you would share some of the things that you say to people when they're kind of touched by this. Maybe they even have a sense of it, but they want to know how.
Yeah, the doing, what can I do, implies that we're missing something and that we have to do something to get it. And that was my assumption, that I had to do a lot of things to develop my psychological well-being. I had to do a lot of things to develop my capacity for love and understanding. And so I was always doing, which is really, again, looking to the outside to get something, having to do something on the outside in order to get well-being. And when I first met Sid, I kept waiting for him to talk about what to do, because every other spiritual teacher I'd ever had would make recommendations about, well, here's what you should do, or whether it be meditation practices or visualizations or spiritual practices. And Sid was the first teacher I came across that didn't do that, because when he had his enlightenment, he hadn't been studying with spiritual teachers. He hadn't been reading any spiritual literature. It was a spontaneous enlightenment experience. And so he believed very deeply that the way people can change dramatically realize their true nature is through insight, not through effort and technique and working hard, and that all you had to do is listen to people reminding you of your true nature, of your spiritual nature, of the fundamental principles that govern your world, the fundamental principles that create your world, and the wisdom and intelligence behind that. And as you listen to people talk about that, like when we do seminars, Natasha and I just did a seminar not long ago in Denmark, and so we're talking to a large group of people there, and you can literally see people in the seminars having insight. Either they become elated, or they go, oh my gosh, I hadn't realized, or, oh, this is so simple, or they start crying, just tears of joy and relief. That's not at all uncommon in these seminars, because the pressure is off to try and listen for and learn something that you then have to remember and do. And this is more just a remembrance of what already is true. And it's a very powerful way for people to change. I've been working 30 years with people teaching these fundamental principles that Sid Banks realized. And it's been pretty amazing to me to see how any human being is just a thought away from an insight that can allow them to relax about their experience and not feel bad about feeling bad, and can get over things really quickly, and can begin to sense and appreciate a much deeper sense of self than any idea they had ever had about themselves, which are so limiting.
Now, Natasha, for you, because you came from a, you know, again, also sort of a, and I'm calling it this as a general category, an interventionist background. Yes. What was your experience of going from, okay, here's what you do, to, well, you don't really do anything?
Yeah. Well, I remember the first seminar I ever went to was yours, Michael. So I was looking for what you were doing. Of course, coming from an NLP background, I was trying to model you, trying to find out your techniques, and I quickly realized that there wasn't any. And it took a while before I could see that deeply. I had a sense of it quite fast, but I didn't. I thought there must be something that you were doing secretly that I just hadn't seen.
I was just that good.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. And then as I dived more in, which I really wanted to do after meeting you, was there came a point, a sort of a tipping point, where I suddenly had a realization of my own, and I can't say what happened. I don't know why that happened or how it happened. I just realized suddenly that I was reacting differently to things, so I wasn't doing anything. And the more I saw that things were happening inside of me and not so much outside, I also start seeing that that's true for everyone. And the more that I've worked with the principles now, I'm making more effort to point people towards that which is always there. This is the beauty. Everybody has this space inside. So I don't have to create anything or make an intervention. I'm just helping people to realize what's already there. Point towards that space inside of them that they have, that they fall into spontaneously every single day. It might be 2 seconds or 5 seconds or a longer time, but everybody, when you start talking to them, fall into the space naturally. And when they start realizing it, they become familiar with this space, and that's when the magic starts to happen. So we can't, you can't do insights, you can't get insights, so we can't do anything to have people have insights, but they come as we point towards the space inside of them where they happen spontaneously. It's beautiful work, and as Dickon said, when we see it in seminars or when we work one-to-one with people, it's the most beautiful thing when you see that in their eyes, that they're seeing something inside of them. Beautiful.
No, I know. I remember hearing... you know, a story of of Sid saying to, I think it was Chip Chipman, we have the most wonderful job in the world.
Yeah.
We find people in various stages of sleep, and then we get to tap them on the shoulder and be with them as they wake up to the full magnificence of life.
Boy, that is so true. You know, the other thing that I think Sid Banks brought into the world was a simplicity by saying there are three fundamental universal factors or forces or principles that underlie all human experience. So he really narrowed it down to the common denominators of thought, consciousness, and mind. And by mind, he was pointing toward divine mind, universal mind, the one mind that we all are being lived by, that truly is what thinks us and lives us. By bringing it down to that, it makes it a universal teaching that will ring true if these principles genuinely are true, that if you can't have a human being who doesn't think. So the principle of thought is essential. You can't have a human being who's not aware or conscious. You can't have a human being who doesn't have a mind, right? So what I love, Michael, is in my work, I was able to teach this to 7-year-olds. Like one little 7-year-old boy I worked with was being abused by his dad on a regular basis. And at some point they found out and intervened, and they were looking for someone to work with the little boy. And he was so angry all the time that he was hurting kids in school on a regular basis. And he would bite kids and draw blood. And so I taught him at some point, you know, I was able to share with him about how thought creates experience. And at a certain point, he had an insight, because we're built for insights. I've never met a human being who isn't built for insights. So if people reflect on something or get quiet and take something in, it's almost guaranteed that at some point they're going to have an insight. They're going to learn something new. They're going to have a new thought occur to them. And this little kid had a new thought where he realized that all of his anger was just his own thinking, and it wasn't just a reaction to a horrible, cruel, unjust world, and he's just a victim of circumstance. And when he had that realization, he immediately stopped fighting and biting kids and hurting kids. And the principal called me up and said, "What did you do to this kid?" I said, "Well, I just reminded him of his own capacity for well-being and the role thought plays in that." And it's hard for people to see that it can be that simple. But again, well, that's the beauty.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's that wonderful Einstein phrase, everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler. And I think we confuse simple and simplistic. And when you see that actually, no, it just actually, this is just how it works. It's kind of amazing to see that. I wanted to ask you guys, as fellow auteurs, as fellow writers, what kind of things you learned in writing about what you'd been teaching? And I'm gonna call you out, because you did tell me at one point you were talking, you said you had a running joke between you where when you were trying to go back and forth on things, you'd go, "Well, if it makes you happy." Just wondering if you could share some of the experience of what writing about this did for you.
Well, first of all, writing, as you know, Michael, it forces you to become really precise. When you talk about something, it's like, well, what do we mean by this? What do we really mean? So that was the precision part was good, because we have these three things that we were always trying to look for when we're writing. One was to keep it really simple. One, to keep it ordinary. And the third thing was that it should be helpful to people. So almost everything that we talked about, it had to go through those three key words, like, is this simple? Is this helpful? Is it ordinary? The other thing I think that both of us really got very good at was trusting that something would come. There would be times where we were together and we would we would get stuck and we would be frustrated and we couldn't move on and everything that was coming was uninspired. And at those times, we would stop, we would go for a walk, we'd have a cup of tea and a chocolate biscuit, which always helps.
So the secret is, how many chocolate biscuits should I eat if I want to write effectively?
Yeah.
I need to.
And which tea? But we came to trust that something would come up. Also, coming from this more mechanistic world that I came from, I was setting goals was something that I was used to, and we didn't set goals. We didn't know when we'd be done. We didn't know how many chapters. We didn't know how to structure it. But we realized that when we were working together, that these things came up naturally. They unfolded, and the book unfolded itself. The structure came apparent to us, but we weren't doing it. There was something moving us in a way that it became just obvious. Oh, this should go first, and then it should come. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly right.
It's all such a good example of what we're talking about, Michael, about as you wake up out of your own personal ideas and beliefs and thoughts, there's an underlying quiet that's there. And when you realize that, when you fall into that space, into that silence, into that inner quiet, that that's where all new thought are born. That because we both knew that very deeply when we were writing this book, collaboration was so easy. You know, in 2 years working together, we did not have an argument. We didn't even have to disagree about things, because if something didn't feel right to one or both of us, it became an invitation to us to fall into this space where something new and creative could then burst forth. And I tell you, every time we did that, Michael, what came fresh and new and creative and inspired was always the answer to what we had been struggling with. And it was always way better than anything we had written before that we were stuck in.
Yeah, no, it's a process I'm intimately familiar with. You know, as I go through my 13 edits of the first draft of books, I always find that expression, the first draft, very funny.
Yeah.
Can
I say one more
thing?
Yeah,
please,
about this,
please,
Michael,
do.
Is that the implications of that very simple understanding that when you're stuck and it doesn't feel right, to instead of leaning into your thinking and thinking harder about it, to fall back away from your thinking, is something that when I look around, most adults that I see, as soon as they're having difficulty in life or are feeling stressed, I see them lean into their personal thinking even more, and they start analyzing or trying to figure out what to do or what's going on or how to respond to something. And they think a lot harder at a time when, if they woke up out of that thinking and their head cleared and they got quiet, they would find what they were looking for. They would start to feel better. They would get more perspective, more clarity. They would get new thinking that would be helpful and responsive to whatever situation that they were in.
Well, it seems to me that there's a degree of trust in that it almost feeds on itself in a good way, that you kind of get an inkling of that, and then you trust it and something great comes from it, and then it's a little bit easier to trust it the next time. And
you won't
believe
what just happened. Just before you said that about trust,
yeah,
Natasha wrote down on a piece of paper we had between us the word trust.
Yeah. And then you said it.
Yeah, well, I don't want to creep you out, but I've got video access. But why don't you? But actually, wonderful. And so, Natasha, yeah, please. What did you want to share about that?
Just that once you start realizing this space within, there becomes this trust that it helps you in a lot of different situations, practical situations. You're uncertain how to handle a situation, you're stuck in a feeling. On a very practical level, you start to trust that if you get, if you touch this space, something new will arise. It will come up. Trusting that we'll find our way if there was something, some part of the book that we were stuck on, or trusting that when I'm stuck in a feeling sad, that it will disappear at some point. And that brings hope, and that's such a powerful thing for anyone, that we can start trusting that there's something that's larger than us that starts to guide us through life in a very practical way, so that we deal with things, we get over our upsets much faster. So I think that's one thing for me in my life, that start studying these principles and seeing how they're living us really has given for me, and especially writing with Deacon, that's one of the things that has come up for us a lot.
One of the sections, and just as we're coming towards the last part of our time together, you have a lovely Q&A section in the book, sort of like an FAQ Q&A. And the one that I hear the most that you put there is, I've been waiting for insights, but I haven't had any. I see other people having insights. When am I going to have mine? And I'd love you to address that for anyone who's listening and going, well, this all sounds lovely, but...
Yeah. Listen, we've broadened our understanding about what insights are, because otherwise you're always waiting for like really brilliant words to pop into your head with like on a marquee, you know, in lights, you know, this profound insight that you can share with the world. And very few of my insights have ever come that way. Instead, an insight is where when you get quiet and you look out at the world from that quiet, the world looks different and better. So that's a sight from within. You're seeing the world free of the conditioning of your own psychological thinking, free of the contamination of your conceptual mind. You're seeing the world more like a baby sees the world than looking through the lens of all your ideas and concepts and beliefs, which distorts and limits our view of people and situations. So very, very simply, when people's heads clear, they see life in a more beautiful fashion, and they see people with more kindness and more understanding, because the only thing that makes them see ugly or bad is their own thinking, their own ideas about that person, their own concepts.
So for us, insights is all away from these huge epiphanies that might happen to a person, but is also just common sense. And insight is just, oh, maybe I should just call Ben. Oh, maybe I should just do this. Common sense is also an insight. It's a sight from within that comes from this space, this unlimited potential that the thought always has for new creative thinking. And common sense comes from that, and it comes in those moments where we go beyond our thinking, when we lean away from thinking harder about how to find the solution and drop out of that thinking, maybe by doing something else, or maybe by looking at a tree or the ocean, dropping out of that and something new comes up. And again, trust comes into that again, because the more that you see that happening in your life, the more you trust that the solutions will come. Insights come by themselves. But if you're looking for this epiphany feeling the whole time, you're looking in the wrong direction. So it's good to just know that common sense is also insight.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I sometimes talk about the difference between Charlton Heston insights and Homer Simpson insights.
Yeah.
And I find I have a lot more Homer Simpson. But lately, actually... And I like the use, because it was interesting. I liked when you were talking about writing, how you talked about simple, helpful, and ordinary. And the ordinary nature of insight, where it's neither, you know, oh my God, or don't. It's actually just, oh. Like, that's the sound that I associate with insight the most.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. It's just suddenly something appears simpler, or it's easier. It's like when you're learning anything, it's difficult. Like you're learning a new computer program or how to ride a bicycle or something. It's difficult. And then all of a sudden something shifts within you and what was difficult gets a little easier. That's a shift from within. That's a sight from within. That's insight. And so that is so ordinary. It's been happening to us our whole life. It's just built into us to have that kind of shift in understanding.
And I think that does take the pressure off
in a
very real way, because it's like, it's not on you. It's not on you being brilliant. If you're just brilliant enough, then you too can have an insight and you too can be happy and you too can be like me, you know.
And it's here's another way of saying the simplicity. Sometimes Sid would joke with us because we'd get so serious and we'd be trying so hard to, you know, learn this or have insights. And he'd go, oh, come on, you know, just go and enjoy your life. And when you stop feeling like you're enjoying your life, just realize it has something to do with thought and you come right back. It's that ordinary. And he lived that way. So it was amazing to see somebody who had this enlightenment experience who was so ordinary, just present to life, enjoying the littlest things. We would joke about Sid because he'd have a cup of tea and he'd go, oh, this is the best cup of tea I've ever had. And he'd go for a walk on the beach. Oh, this is the best day I've ever experienced. And everything was like the best. But he was sincere. He was not saying that. It was like he was experiencing things so fresh and alive and in the moment. He lived, if you will, he lived in the world of insight. You know, one time he said, I learned something new every minute of every day. But he's talking about this deeper understanding of insight as shifts towards simplicity, understanding, beauty, enjoyment. That's ordinary. That's just available to every one of us.
Yeah, I think I heard George Pransky once say that, you know, he would have made a terrible film critic because every movie was just the best movie he ever seen.
And I've been to so many movies with George that I can verify that's absolutely true. I don't think I've ever been to a movie that he complained about. You know, he was always see something interesting because his mind was so open. He'd get new thinking a lot, you know. And he loved that creative process.
So listen, we're coming down to the last, literally almost last minute of our time together. My guests have been Dr. Dickon Bettinger and Natasha Sverdlov. You can learn more about Dickon at www.3principlesmentoring.com and more about Natasha at www.theprinciplesinstitute.com. The book is Coming Home, Uncovering the Foundations of Psychological Well-Being. And I just want to share what I wrote about it because it's my show, I'm allowed, but also because it was very heartfelt. And what I wrote when I read the book, and once I got past my horror that they'd written the same book as me, but different, I wrote, the peaceful feeling and quiet whisper of spiritual truth can be found on every page of this wonderful book. The simple principles shared inside will help you find your way back home to the space of pure consciousness within. And I really think that is the contribution of this book and the contribution to not just the teachings that we collectively call the Inside Out Understanding or the Three Principles, but just to the raising the consciousness of humanity. And I'm going to finish with one last Sid quote that you guys have in the book, which is that the state of no thought is when the personal thought system finds perfect stillness, transcending time, space, and matter, and finds the true nature of mind. Dickon and Natasha, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. It's fun.
Until next time, have fun, learn heaps. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.